One stood in front of me and the other sat on one side. And the third person, who was seated too close for comfort, started running his hand up my legs. And I was wearing a skirt and his hand was going up my skirt.
You know, I start feeling someone putting their arms like close to my butt. I moved, but I kept like hearing someone like coming closer and closer. So I kind of like pushed away, but I always felt something.
You know, there'll be this phrase that men will say, they'll say, go on, cheer up. Yeah. You know, like, what? Give us a smile. You know, like, why are you looking so glum?
One thing that everybody told me was not to say anything. And I think that's something that we as a community need to overcome, because we need to say something.
Shanuki, Carmen, Eliza, and Sarah come from different parts of the world. But all of them have one thing in common. They have all experienced verbal and often physical sexual harassment in public places. And they've had enough about it. This week, the United Nations is celebrating its annual 16-day activism and awareness-raising campaign against gender-based violence. And UNFPA, the Sexual and Reproductive Health Agency of the UN, has partnered with an independent photojournalism initiative called Cheer Up Love. It's created by Eliza Hatch, and it's dedicated to documenting the world over stories of women and girls affected by sexual harassment in public places. The Cheer Up Love and UNFPA project is called Don't Look Away. Developed in Sri Lanka, where the harassment of women and girls has been rigorously documented by the UN, it sheds the spotlight on 16 women, 16 instances of harassment, 16 multimedia stories shared on several platforms to say, enough is enough. Welcome to Gender Focus, a podcast from UN News. I'm Yasmina Guerda, and just a small warning before we begin. Because of the subject matter, some of the language contained in this podcast may not be suitable for young children. The 16-Day Don't Look Away project was born because, in 2015, UNFPA carried out a study on sexual harassment in public transportation in Sri Lanka. The findings were alarming. 9 in 10 women who use public transportation said they were subjected to sexual harassment, and 97% of the perpetrators were said to be men. The disturbing testimonies included everything ranging from inappropriate remarks to excessive closeness and the grabbing of genitalia without consent. For example, here is Shanuki's story, who participated in the Don't Look Away project in Colombo, the capital of Sri Lanka.
My first incident happened when I was 16 years old. My parents would never let me travel by bus, and I never understood why. So one evening I had theater school, and I lied to my mom saying I'm getting a lift back home with a friend. And instead of getting a lift back home, I thought, why not get on a bus? And at one stop, there were 4 boys who got on the bus. They saw me seated alone at the back. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know that I was supposed to fear them in the first place. They came and started saying things to me. They were getting closer and closer, and it was very uncomfortable. And then one stood in front of me and the other sat on one side. And the third person, who was seated too close for comfort, started running his hand up my legs. And I was wearing a skirt and his hand was going up my skirt. And my body somehow froze, and I was in full-blown panic mode. I tried to push them off, but the guy who was standing in front of me just pushed me back. At that point, I kicked and then I started screaming. And when I started screaming, the bus actually stopped and the guys got out. They just got out and ran, and I was just there. Nobody helped me. I got down, ran home. Didn't tell my parents up to this day, but I never got on a bus again until I was very much older.
Shanuki says the reason why it was important for her to share this story is because she wants men and women who witness these kinds of situations to be aware and to reject the normalization of this kind of abuse.
You find a lot of women in buses, on public transport, on the streets. When they see harassment, they look the other way because it's not your business. That's kind of a culture we have. It's not your business, so you look the other way. We won't stand up and support. We won't speak up for that woman who doesn't have the power to speak. And I think that's the first thing that should change, is that we need to raise our bloody voices. And if the public makes a big enough outcry, then maybe the authorities will be moved to take stricter measures.
Creating more awareness over the issue of harassment in public places is exactly what Eliza Hatch set out to do when she launched the Cheer Up Love project 2 years ago in London, and why UNFPA partnered with her. Now, she has collected the stories of close to 150 women. She came into our studio at UN headquarters in New York to tell us how it all started.
I started the project as kind of a reaction to like a lifetime of normalized sexual harassment that I experienced growing up. I grew up in London. I was no stranger to kind of being harassed at school or on the way to school and the bus and whatnot. And it kind of just became almost like a background noise to, you know, growing up in a city. But it wasn't until a man walked past me in January and told me to cheer up that I really started to kind of question all of these things. And it made me realize that what I was experiencing, you know, it wasn't complimentary. It wasn't just background noise. It was actually harassment and the kind of stuff that maybe we shouldn't put up with on a daily basis. And especially as a woman would never say that to a man in the same context. But anyway, this kind of sparked a huge conversation between me and my friends, you know, swapping stories of sexual harassment. And then my male friends interjected into the conversation. They didn't understand that being told to smile or cheer up, you know, that wasn't, it wasn't a compliment. They just didn't get it. They were saying things like, well, you know, I'd love it if a girl pinched me on the bum every now and again. And so from that point, I kind of realized that the fact that sexual harassment was happening in the first place was bad enough, but there was this complete lack of awareness surrounding the subject. And that's when I decided that I wanted to do something about it. So that's when I started Cheer Up Love. I interview women about their experiences. I actually meet them in the place that they experienced that harassment or a place similar. So like if they experience harassment on a bus, we'd go and do the shoot on a bus or a subway platform or something like that. And we kind of use that environment for her as like a stage for her to like speak out about her experience, photograph her there, and then we publish everything.
You've done this in Tokyo, you've done this in London, you've done this in New York, you've done this now in Sri Lanka as well, as part of a partnership with the United Nations. Can you tell me a little bit about what you noticed doing it in so many different places?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the crazier things about the project has been traveling to different countries and kind of noticing the similarity between, you know, the stories that I tell and the women that I meet. Because I started the project in London and the whole kind of thing was based off my personal experiences and going off the stories that I used to hear from my friends. And, you know, you never really at that point thought that it was any bigger than your close group of friends or maybe the town that you grew up in. And it was when I started opening up and having those conversations with more and more women outside my friendship group and women in different countries that I started to realize the scale of the issue and that it wasn't just something that affected me and my friends growing up. It affects women kind of constantly all around the globe. And one of the biggest things I realized was that I would go to a completely different country, meet completely different women, strangers, and be able to have this common ground with them, be able to have a sort of instantaneous connection, be able to talk to them for 2 hours about these shared experiences on something so universal.
And of all these stories that you have heard and recorded, is there one that stayed with you?
It's funny because I get asked that quite a lot, to pick out kind of like one story. I find it quite hard to kind of say like, this is the worst one, or this was the most hard-hitting one, or this is the one that resonated with me, because I do get comments sometimes being like, well, you know, some of these stories are so much worse than others, and some of them are just being told to smile, and others are being, you know, physically assaulted. You know, how can you have these stories occupying the same space, you know, when they're not the same? And what I try to do is create a space so that women can come forward, no matter how big or small their story is, because that's a comment that women get all the time, you know, oh, well, it's not that bad, and it could have been a lot worse. It doesn't matter if someone will brush off your story and say it wasn't that serious. Like, this is a space where you can tell your story no matter how big or small it was. I want women to feel equally listened to. And I think there is such a definitive line between wanted and unwanted attention and respectful communication. Because people will say, oh, well, you know, it was just a touch on the knee, or it was just like a hand on the waist, or it was just a throwaway comment, you know, or it was just meant to be a compliment. And it's really, there's no kind of overarching way of being like, this is definitive, you can't do this, you can't say that. Because it's completely dependent on the situation that you're in. It's being able to read a situation, being able to know if someone's uncomfortable when you're talking to them, being able to kind of understand if a woman is feeling threatened, you know, in the way that you're talking to her.
Was there something that was special about the Sri Lanka project?
I guess something that was really special was even having the opportunity to speak to these girls
because getting people to even speak to you in the first place was really, really tough. People didn't want to share their stories. They didn't want to have their face on camera. They didn't feel comfortable speaking out about the issue because it's just not done, really. It's a taboo subject. It was almost amazing in the first place being able to find 16 women who were willing to talk about their experiences publicly and willing to kind of break the stigma about normalized sexual harassment. So I guess that felt like a really big achievement.
That was Eliza Hatch, the creator of the Cheer Up Love Project. And indeed, even though the vast majority of women report being harassed in public transportation, very few feel comfortable talking about it publicly. Only 4% of them even report it to the police. This, of course, poses a major problem when it comes to improving the situation, because service providers can hide behind the low reporting rates to claim that there is no issue to begin with. That is why Hussein Abbasi Essiet, who coordinated the Don't Look Away digital project for UNFPA, says it was important, in addition to issuing the data of the survey, to also provide women with a public platform so they start finding the courage to speak up.
One of the main reasons why UNFPA was keen to work with Eliza was because of the nature of her independent project, the Cheer Up Love project. Because what she does through that project is to help give women who've experienced sexual harassment a public voice. Of course, women have a voice regardless, but they don't necessarily always have a public forum for them to share their stories. And of course, creating a community of solidarity so that women, not just in Sri Lanka, but around the world, know that this is something that's happening, and together finding strength by hearing these stories. So that was something that was really important for us when embarking on this project. And of course, I think there is something, you know, inherently therapeutic about a project like this, something cathartic where women are able to retell their stories and sort of reclaim the spaces where the instances or incidents of sexual harassment have taken place. So just being able to do that in Sri Lanka was also a very conscious choice, because oftentimes when you hear about the ongoing conversation around the Me Too movement, it's often very Western or looked at through a Western lens. And we thought, especially since we had data about the issue in Sri Lanka, it might be also interesting to look at this issue of the Me Too movement, sexual harassment and gender-based violence, even just women's empowerment and gender equality, from a non-traditional lens. So that was very key for us in terms of choosing to take that project to Sri Lanka.
What are some of the things that you noticed, some of the things that shocked you while you were there with these women?
Of course, you know, getting data about any place or hearing stories is one thing, but being in a place and actually seeing these buses, you know, hearing women talk about how they had to stop going to school, women who talked about how they stopped using public transportation entirely, you know, resorting to taxis, and just being able to see and understand how directly it impacts women's lives, not just them, but even their families, and understanding that this is an urgent issue that needs to be addressed because it's putting the lives of women and girls at risk. Our staff in the country have, you know, made a number of interventions in terms of how to address the issue, from creating a public awareness campaign to creating a government hotline that women can call to report cases of sexual harassment, and just thinking through how we can address this from a holistic point of view.
The interventions that Hussein Abbasi Essiet from UNFPA is referring to there have already had a tangible impact in Sri Lanka. Sharika Kure, who works on women's rights and gender issues for the UNFPA country office, says she has seen a very noticeable increase in interest in the public sphere. She spoke to us on the phone from Colombo.
I think one of the key factors is when we released this data, we created a kind of public discourse on the issue. And as a result, a lot of other stakeholders have come to us to discuss the issue and have also taken interventions on their own. There has been a number of media articles in mainstream media about the issue. And there has been so many discussions happening in TV programs where they address the issue. Of course, we haven't monitored this in terms of kind of having the kind of data to evaluate the programs as of now. But the response that we have got has been immense. We work with a coalition of partners such as the Ministry of Women's Affairs, Ministry of Transport, the National Safety Commission for Passengers, We are working at a strategic level on how we can give policy input to make transport more inclusive and safer for women and girls. We are also working with media and other NGOs, our NGOs, on addressing the issue.
Despite all these encouraging signs of increased awareness, the main obstacle in really changing things, says Sharika, remains the attitude of service providers and other commuters who continue to turn a blind eye. Hopefully, UNFPA's call to not look away will help change that, one story at a time. That's it for this edition of the Gender Focus podcast. You can find more information on the project on the UN News website or at unfpa.org/16days. I'm Yasmina Guerda. Thank you for listening.